crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ, leave your flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zips, SIPs. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio. My name is Stank Dog, and today we are going to be talking about something very interesting. All right, that was my pathetic attempt at a Sigmund Freud impression, because we're going to actually be talking about some pretty deep stuff coming up later on with my new co-host today for the show, Decius. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
And thank you for being on, because we are going to talk about something that you have a lot of experience with and I have a lot of questions about, so we're going to go over some of that later on, specifically memetics, but of course we will go into some detail later on. But before we do that, and again, I apologize for that horrible impression. I didn't say it was a good Freud impression. If you would indulge me and go through some email with me.
Let's do it.
All right. Actually, before that, let's do a couple other little housekeeping things and get these out of the way. First of all, I mentioned last episode that we had the magazine page up and ready to go. Well, I've updated the pages with the cover image, sample PDFs that you can look at, browse through, see what the topic is, see what the magazine looks like. And all the source code and all the scripts from the magazine. You don't have to retype in all that code, specifically Slip Mode and his IP tables code that's in there that's a couple pages long. So you don't have to type all that in. You can just go straight to magazine.binrev.com and go to whatever issue you want. This is true for all issues. And download that code to save you hopefully a lot of typing time. And then modify it as you see fit or as you need it. That's the whole point of it. And since I brought his name up, shouts to Slip Mode. If you aren't already listening, go over and check out In the Now, his radio show over there at SlipNet. And what else did I want to talk about here? Oh, Hack Radio is coming up very soon. We've also been letting you guys know that that's coming. And it still is very, very soon. I am waiting now for people to send me emails if you want airtime on the station. I'm trying to work out a schedule so everybody gets time where they want, when they want, the days they want, etc., etc. I've gotten a couple people who have emailed me, but I also have a couple of noticeable absences. So please, don't assume that your show is going to be on there, that I'm just going to take it. I need you to email me because I need other information. I want to know what your official description and stuff is going to be. I'm not going to make stuff up and have that kind of weird situation going on. So please, if you go into the forums, forums.binrev.com, and in the Hacker Media Forum, there is a description there of what I need from everybody, and I need you to email me that stuff so I can start making a schedule. And frankly, I'm going to start making a schedule by the time you hear this. I will have started, and I guess we're going to have to go first come, first serve. So please, the sooner you get that stuff into me, the sooner we can go on. And if you have sent it into me, obviously, then we've got it, and we will see what we can work out for everybody. Third thing I wanted to bring on, and I'm not going to get mad about this. I'm a little disappointed that I had to take this step, but I've had a problem, and I've mentioned it on the show, where we have a hacker's gallery on the site. And in the forums, we've uploaded a lot of avatars, and we give people room to store their own avatars and emoticons, smileys, whatever you want to call them. And over the past year plus, people have been very liberal in their use of them. So, you know what? I don't really mind if people use, you know, link over to the site or show it or email it to people, because that's only a few hits here and there. That's fine. But we've had a problem that's just been growing and growing, where people are just absolutely leeching the graphics from the site. And it's starting to add up. So, you know, I came on the show a few times. I try to be polite about it and just, you know, do the honor system. Kind of just, you guys don't take advantage of it. I'm not here to host your image. There are tons of image servers out there that's their job and that's what they do. You can go find them. That's not what I'm trying to provide here. So I just finally decided that I'm going to have to do something about it. So I have blocked deep linking to any of the images, at least in the gallery and in the forums. The link boxes still work and stuff like that, but all the other graphics are being blocked out now because it's just the bandwidth is starting to add up, and we need every little bit with Hack TV and with all the radio shows. We need every little bit. And secondly, frankly, I'm a little bit insulted at the way people are doing some of this stuff. They're using emoticons from my site and other people's forums and other people's sites. I mean, do you really think they're pulling something over on me? Do you think I don't see this happening? So anyway, I've let it go for a while, but you know what? It ends. It ends now. Do you ever have people do that? Has everybody ever, like, leached graphics from your site?
Well, I don't have that many graphics, but I understand, you know, information wants to be free, but bandwidth is expensive.
Yeah, you know, it comes to a point where you have to do something.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, it's cool that you went into your website and actually implemented a technical solution for preventing deep linking. There are so many news sites that have, you know, gone out and filed lawsuits.
I was going to sue everybody, but...
Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, and I always get frustrated when I see some site suing people because they're getting deep linked and, you know, it's a few lines in their Apache configuration to prevent that from happening, and, you know, I guess that's too much trouble for them to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't want to have to. I've known all along, you know, I just didn't want to have to do it, but, well, I guess I have to do it.
Yeah.
I'm still going to sue everybody. Hey, man, I need the money for bandwidth. What do you want to know?
Hey, that's a great revenue generating technique.
Exactly. Fish them in, wait a few months and trap them, and then spring the lawsuit on them.
There you go.
Yeah, we won't go off into that tangent. Oh, okay, but that's it for the general housekeeping stuff. Now, we're going to jump into a few emails, and there's some... We actually had several. I cut out a few. Wait, let me play the email intro, our new email intro music first. All right, and now let's do the email before I started talking before I played our theme music there. We got some really good emails, and we're going to talk about some of them today. I'm going to save some of them for an upcoming show to make sure we have enough time later on to talk about some stuff. And because the ones that we got were pretty good and pretty in-depth, so I wanted to make sure we gave enough time to each of them. And our first one comes from... I hope I pronounced this. I think it's Draken. It might be Draken. I think it's Draken. Who says, Stank Dog, I've been listening to Ben Rev for a while now. I think you've got a great program and am amazed at the new and exciting content you're able to provide on a weekly basis while still maintaining a job and a life. The juggling act... Well, I don't know about the life. I didn't guarantee that part. The juggling act between your own individual hacking interests, your life and job, and the content from the show must be a delicate one. Thanks for all that you do. Yeah, you just don't know. I've recently checked out the BenRev, and this is the reason I have this email on here. I recently checked out the BenRev RFA PBX that the DDP has set up. I think it's pretty damn sweet, especially the ability to conference and listen to the archive shows. Admittedly, I don't know much about them, PBXs. However, I'm anxious to learn. I'm going to be conducting a lot of my own research upon the topic. I think it would be really cool, though, if you discussed on BenRev some of the issues concerning a PBX. How difficult would it be to set one up? What type of software would be required? How feasible is it for an individual or group of individuals to set one up? My friend and I, whom you may remember from the war typing and Wi-Fi antenna email sent in, have been considering establishing a PBX with a lot of our favorite music and self-generated content located on it. That way, when we're bored, in class, or anywhere else, we have our entire archive to listen to. Thanks for your help in advance. And again, that was from Draken. Now, you know what? That is an excellent suggestion, because you're absolutely right. That could be a whole show and then some dedicated to talking about that. I'm going to try to talk to Knot Theory. And also, the DDP, PBX, you called it. I guess that's okay. I don't think Bell's Mind, PBX, that's Knot Theory's box. So just to make sure he gets credit, that's Knot Theory who set all that stuff up. And I'm going to try to get him on a show again soon, whenever we can work out a schedule with him, because he's a busy guy. And he's running, let's see, that could go into so much detail because of not only the setup. You know, I'd like to do an overview of what it is and how and why it works and the setup and the maybe some general programming behind it of how you can write scripts and stuff, because I know that Knot Theory really gets into that a lot. And even how it can in turn interact with other pieces of hardware like voice over IP boxes and things like that, separate from the actual asterisk box itself, asterisk box. So, yeah, I'm going to have to get Knot Theory on here and talk about not only the asterisk box, but any other solutions, but mostly asterisk is the one we really have fallen in love with. Do you have any experience now with the asterisk software, Decius?
I have some experience. I haven't delved in it too deeply, but I'm actually in the planning stages of a project to kind of do some analysis of voice over IP security, and I think that... you know, we'll be taking a look at that box and some other machines as well. It's a really interesting software package, and those guys have gone out to a number of the hacker cons in the Southeast and talked about their project and what they're doing with it and what it's capable of. And you know, it's really neat to have a PBX and to have one that's designed you know, with the idea of people playing around with it in mind. And it's got a lot of interesting features that. You know, a commercial PBX probably wouldn't have that. You know, you might want if you were setting up some kind of personal thing for your friends.
Right, and the fact that you can develop for it, you know.
Yeah.
That's not something they normally. That's not normally an option you have.
That's certainly true. This, you know, voice over IP is a really exciting thing. You know, the reality is that over the next 10 years, a lot of changes are going to happen to the phone system, and you know, it's all going to be about voice over IP, and it's a very exciting thing to get involved with right now, like in its early stages, and be able to tinker with it.
Yeah, and without going off on another tangent that you and I probably both would just jump on, if we can just keep the government out of it.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement on that front lately. The FCC has ruled that the FBI can, or rather that people providing voice over IP services have to provide the FBI with access to their networks the same way that people running POTS networks have to provide the FBI with access to their networks.
Encryption time.
That was a pretty controversial development, but I don't know. I could probably talk for 30 minutes about that stuff. So
yeah, I know. That's why I said we don't want to go off. We don't want to go off on that one because you're right. It could be a whole show. I thought that was actually shot down at first, but they eventually did get that through.
Yep.
That they have access.
FCC voted 5-0 quite recently, like a few weeks ago.
Great.
I can dig it up. But
oh my goodness, that's just freaking wonderful. Oh man, what a downer. Well, you know, that's where encryption comes in. That's, you know, until they ban that too, until they outlaw that. Anyway, yes, thank you for the suggestion to get back on the lighter topic so I don't get pissed off. I mean, peeved or yeah, whatever. thank you for the suggestion. We are definitely going to try. I am really going to put that on a list. I'm going to put that on a future episode, no doubt about it. So thank you for the suggestion. Another email we got this week was from Exile. Exile says, "Dear Stank Dog, I recall in episode 57, that was just last week, Knot Theory was speaking of how he would like to maybe see Apple's downfall. Well, it seems it's coming closer because in this news article, it describes the work of a Norwegian hacker who cracked some of Apple's multimedia technology." And then he provides a link. Believe me, you guys can go out there and find. I'll put the link in the show notes eventually, but you can go out there and find it pretty easily. Just do a search for DVD John Johansson. It's the same person from the infamous DVD case. Anyway, Stank, love the show. Keep up the good work. This is the first email I've ever sent you, and I hope it may be of some interest. I plan on buying the mag so I can see what other helpful things you have for the community. Farewell for now. Well, thank you very much for the email. First email of yours I've ever read on the air, obviously. I don't know. Let me just not put words in anybody's mouth. I'm not sure that Not Theory requested or was calling for their downfall. He might, if we put him on the spot, he might want that. But I know he doesn't like them because they're proprietary hardware. And frankly, I kind of feel the same way to a certain extent. But that's the only thing they've got right now. You know, especially their operating system now is, you know, built on top of Unix backbone. So they're not even really fully developing their own operating system from the ground up. So they can't depend on software only or operating system to compete. All they've got is their hardware. So I kind of understand it from a business perspective. It's either that or you know, die, go out of business. So I understand that. But what you're mentioning here, again, this is John Johansson. And this just happened, I think, a day or two ago, maybe over the weekend.
Ago.
I'm sorry?
It wasn't long ago. I think it was the end of last week.
Yeah, it was it's definitely since the last episode that this has happened. And what he has done here, and let me kind of back up, because this is actually very interesting what he has done. This is not, also not too recently, in the past year, he had come up with another trick for iTunes itself. For the iPod, for iTunes, for Apple's iTunes system, which, honestly, I don't have a Mac, so I don't really know much about it. But this is not that. This is something new within the past week. And what he's figured out, though, is I don't like the way that was reported. I looked at three or four different stories on this, and they're making it sound like an iPod / iTunes thing. And it's really not exactly. It's not so much that at all. What he's done is he's figured out a way not to crack iTunes itself or the encryption within iTunes, but the way that the music is broadcast over Apple's hardware, their access points that Microsoft. Whoa, that would have been. Whew. We do not want those two getting together. Actually, they are together, because does Microsoft still own a percentage or a small?
It's a very strange relationship. Microsoft certainly sells its products for the Macintosh. It's interesting.
There was that whole conspiracy theory that they sunk however many million dollars and bought shares of Apple back when it was struggling, and the conspiracy theory was that it was worth it for them to drop a few million into it to keep them around so that they couldn't cry that there was no competition. Instead of putting themselves as to be a true obvious monopoly, the conspirators say that they bought Apple only to keep them around and dangle them around as a token operating system as competition.
Well, I've got a Mac, and you know, if that's the case, then I'm glad they did, because now I've got a really nice Unix workstation. But
I don't personally have a problem with Mac. I think Mac got pretty cool stuff. I just wish it wasn't. I wish other people made them besides Apple.
That's true. They went through a period of time though where I wasn't too happy with their stuff.
Got me a little.
I'll let you go ahead.
Oh, I was just getting. Actually, I just took a sip of iced tea there.
Well, I was going to say, you know, just to talk about this cryptography in the iTunes system and how it interacts with these access points. You know, and there's also another thing that happened in the last couple weeks where I think Real Media cracked Apple's DRM technology that they used to prevent you from playing iTunes songs you've purchased from iTunes on other players. And sort of released a compatible player, and Apple responded by patching the code so that they couldn't do that anymore. Oh, I think actually Real was selling songs that would be that could be played on the iPod that used the iPod's DRM. But anyway, I mean, there is a, you know, I guess I have some concerns as this moves forward that you know, this DRM technology, this encryption technology, is not just being used to prevent, you know, illegal copying of copyrighted music, but it's also kind of creating this platform lock-in where, you know, I've bought a lot of songs on iTunes, and, you know, if I wanted to buy another player instead of buying an iPod the next time I buy a music player, I, you know, I won't be able to play my songs on that new player. I'd have to repurchase all my songs. And, you know, if I wanted to stream my songs out to a device that was different than, you know, one of Apple's access points, you know, I couldn't do that. I would have to buy an Apple access point, or, you know, I was out of luck, you know, notwithstanding the encryption crack from a few days ago. But, you know, really things like this are the only thing that doesn't make me as worried about getting sort of locked into this platform. The fact that people are out there trying to, you know, kind of figuring this stuff out and providing tools, and, you know, if I decided I wanted to move to a different platform, I might be able to bring my music collection with me that I've purchased legitimately. So I don't know. I'm kind of worried about that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like that, it's an excellent point. The thing is, let's say again, I said on the show before that I still 99 cents is still not quite low enough for me. My price point is 50 cents. I'll pay 50 cents for songs that I like.
Yeah.
Okay, and everybody has their individual price point. But let's say 99 cents is my price point, and I start buying these songs. You're absolutely right that I am locked in to the proprietary hardware that will play these particular songs. What's to stop Apple from, you know, and don't tell me that the recording industry and the businesses are not going to do this, because we've seen it in the past as increasing CD sale and seeing CD prices and stuff go. What's to stop them next year from jumping the price up to $1.99 a song, and then $2.99, and then, oh, you can't buy individual songs anymore, you have to buy the whole album digitally through iTunes, and it's going to cost you, and eventually you're buying the same $16.99 album that you can only get through iTunes, and what is your other choice? Well, abandon your entire collection? You've sunk so much money into this particular format and this particular hardware that you're locked into it. Is there a way, somebody email me, and maybe Decius, maybe you know this, is there a way that at some point, let's say I decide, you know what, I don't like iTunes anymore because a new alternative, Aug Vorbis, takes off, and they start making players open source that you can modify the players and put extra storage space, and it takes off, and Aug Vorbis takes off as a format, and I decide, yes, I'm switching over to that. Is there an option to do that? Can you get all of your iTunes stuff that you bought and paid for and validly own? Can you get those and convert them over to another format so that you can buy on new hardware?
Not legally.
No, and that's ridiculous.
There are some tools out there, but it's illegal to distribute them under the DMCA. So, you know, they're kind of transient. They're usually offshore and they're hard to get a hold of. You know, there is some stuff out there, but, you know, it's definitely not straightforward. And, I mean, maybe you and I could get through the hoops, but, you know, a regular consumer couldn't.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we're always preaching. We don't go into a lot of politics on the show, but that's one of the ones that just affects us so much that it's just ridiculous, the DMCA. It's just... And this is an absolute example of it right here. If you don't think in a couple of years they have the potential to abuse this and people aren't going to be locked into this stuff, you're not thinking clearly. You're not thinking ahead.
You're right. And this has absolutely nothing to do with intellectual property whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole different... This is a business trick. But yep. Anyway, let me rein back in here, because actually what John Johansson has done here, DVD John, I hate it when the media calls him that, it's slapping, you know, the homeless hacker, DVD John, you know, all these, they just make up these names for people. What he did now, I thought was really cool, because it wasn't so much dealing with the file itself. What he found out is that Apple's airport access points, their airport's hardware, will apparently work and interact with the iPod and let you stream music to a stereo in your house, for example. And I know they make a tiny one that you can plug into the iPod into your car. I don't know if that's the same. I would assume it's the same protocol, just a smaller scale. That will let you play your songs on your iPod and broadcast them to your radio inside of your car, very, very short distance. And apparently the access point, you can do the same thing in your house. You can stream your music into your actual nice stereo system in your living room, for example, wireless over the airport access point. Well, he realized, and what he has figured out, is that you don't have to necessarily deal with the files themselves. You can deal with the files in transit. You can catch the files and how they're being encrypted and broadcasted and shouted out through the access point. And that's what he's cracked. That's what he's done. It's a crack, or actually a key, to the encryption itself, the encryption of broadcasting those files. So he's catching them after they leave the system and as they're encrypted on the way to the stereo.
Well, I think actually what, if I'm not mistaken, I think that the deal is that these access points have a private key and a public key, and he found the public key for the access points, which means that I don't think it's so much that he can intercept traffic coming from your computer to the access point, because in order to do that, he would need the private key in the access point. But he can, what he can do is write software, say for Linux, that plays music on the access point. So that you could buy an Apple access point, and you know, without having to have a Mac, you could use it from your Linux machine. You could maybe use it from your Windows machine if someone wrote the appropriate software that used this key. I think that's the story.
Well, that's another part of it too. That's something he released, I think, a few weeks ago called, oh my gosh, what was the name of that? He released an app that does that very thing, and I can't think of the name of it offhand, but it was in this article, in these articles as well. But the combination of the two of those things will, yes, allow you to broadcast, since you now have the key. He cracked the key, like you said, that will now allow you to broadcast it from a Linux box or something like that. But it's basically, if I understood, and by all means, somebody correct me, email me, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I understood it to be was that you can now take, I guess the application of this would be, you can now take your MP3 collection and encoding it with the key that for the airport, you can start streaming your MP3s in the same exact way as you would have done with the iTunes format. Is that, am I understanding it correctly there?
Yeah, I think you're right. You can stream MP3s using the iTunes streaming format. So anything that can receive iTunes streams can receive streams from you without having to use iTunes.
Right. So, okay, maybe I was a little unclear on explaining it there, but the long and short of it is that, because what he's always been, besides being a big open source advocate, he's also... against intellectual property rights a lot, like we are somewhat. And he said all along that, you know, the whole closed source, the whole closed proprietary application system is what he doesn't like, and why he's done so many things with Apple and the iTunes stuff lately is because he wants to be able to do the same thing with MP3s. If he bought and paid for it, and not just for Apple, and I don't want to put words in his mouth either, but not just for Apple, but when people buy something and spend their hard-earned money and buy a product like this, you know, to me, I don't understand how they can try to enforce all these extra rules on something that after I've got it in my house. Like, you know, I'm not a big gamer, but like the console gamers were all, you know, about you can't mod your Xbox or you can't mod your Dreamcast or whatever it is, you know, you can't do that stuff with what... No, I bought it. I walked out of the store with it. I brought it into my house. I'm going to do what I want to. If I want to set it on fire and dance around it naked, that's what I'm going to do. And I've done that on many occasions, don't get me wrong. But that's, I hate it when they try to limit people using what their, you know, their hardware and stuff that they buy. So by building in these keys and this encryption and stuff like that, they feel like they've been slighted. Oh, somebody cracked your encryption. Guess what? Too bad. I don't feel sorry for you at all. So that's exactly what happened here. iTunes only? Hell no! That is completely unacceptable. No! So, you know, I think that's exactly, you know, I'm glad there are people that think like that and have the ability to do something about it. So I think this was a great story, and I'm going to read more on it myself because I do want to be perfectly clear on exactly what hit, and I got to admit, his site is down. As you're listening to this, the site is down. I don't know why. Ironically, the site is... I think the site's name is So Sue Me.
Really?
Yeah, because he's been sued so many times and threatened. It's not SoSueMe.com, but it's on another site. It's his blog on another site. I can't think of the name of it. I'll put it in the show notes, obviously, after we're done. But it's down right now anyway. So when I went there to actually get the technical information and the details on it, I couldn't get to the site, and there was no archives that I could find anywhere that were as up-to-date as the last few days when he released it. So I don't know if he's gotten threatened again, if he's gotten sued again, cease and desist, or if the site's just, you know, slash-dotted or something.
You know, the first sound that was ever put in an Apple computer computer was also called SoSumi, because Apple Records had sued them because they called themselves Apple and said that it was a trademark, that they were infringing on their trademark, and the arrangement they reached with Apple Records is that they would never include audio capabilities in their computers. So when they finally did include audio capabilities, they added the sound, and they called it SoSumi.
Yeah, I vaguely remember Rax telling me that story one time before. There's some irony in there somewhere. Anyway, I like the way he was thinking about this whole thing. It's not always about looking at the ends of the chains, as I like to make a metaphor for it. Is, you know, it's not looking at the file at the beginning or the end result and whatever. There's all these steps in between and all the links in the chain. You don't look at just the ends of the chain and try to chip the end off or try to break the end or try to bend it to whatever. Look at all of the individual links in the chain and break the weakest one in there. And if that's a piece of hardware that broadcasts the music out there, that may be the weak point that you can override and make it work for what you want it to do. You know, there's so many different ways and so many points of attack that I like the way that, from what I've seen and the stuff that he's done in the past, I like the way he thinks. So, big credit to him for this. Alright, now I have another email here from Fireblade, who says, "Dear Stank Dog, my name is Fireblade and I live in Belgium. I love your show and I told all my friends about it. The reason why I mail you is because you talked about the iPod," we just talked about the iPod, "and that you have cheaper MP3 players. I bought a GP32, it's a handheld that looks like a Game Boy Advance, but you can connect it to your PC via a USB cable, and then you can put files on the smart media card. This rules because you can put games, movies, cartoons, and music on it, and that all for 150 euros. I'm rough on, I don't know what the translate or what the equivalent would be here, but 150 euros. It's open source, so a lot of programmers make new programs, games, firmware like the OS. I just wanted to tell you this because it's really cool, and I wanted to inform you. Greets from Fireblade straight out of Belgium." Now, funny, maybe he was predicting we were going to talk about the iPod or something, but, well, first of all, he's from Belgium. Not only is he from Belgium, but he's straight out of Belgium. Like, gangster out of Belgium. So, shouts to Belgium. We get emails from so many cool places. I just can't reiterate that enough. I love getting emails from other countries. I can't believe that somebody in Belgium listens to this show. I'm shocked every time I get an email like this. So, we're very much glad to have you listening. Thank you very much. And I guess this does kind of harken back to what we were talking about a minute ago. Here in the United States, we're limiting everything and trying to make all this proprietary hardware and stuff like that. And I love hearing a story like this because it just goes to remind us further and further how we continue to stifle creativity here in the United States. In this country, in the United States of America, we are stifling creativity, especially with all these intellectual property laws that they're passing and the strictness and these... It's just ridiculous how they do it. Other countries are embracing open source, the open source movement. They're putting out new products, better products, more flexible products that you can adapt and customize and use as you see fit. Well, what are we doing over here? We're spending all our time waiting in line for a court date and lawyers' offices and filling out lawsuits, for God's sake. Oh, I didn't want to get mad on this episode. Okay. You say something about this. I got to calm down. I got to have an iced tea.
Oh, man.
And you're going to get mad, too. I can feel it.
Well.
Maybe we should. Okay, you know what?
But, I mean, it's almost what do you say, you know?
Yeah, I mean, let's accentuate.
I totally agree that, in the United States, where, you know, that there are a lot of people who have a lot of, you know, sort of infrastructure built up that is invested in the old way that media works and in the broadcast form of media and in these sort of distribution networks that involve handing people discs and handing them paper and handing them cassettes and these guys are threatened by the way that the world is changing and the United States seems to have taken the position in terms of how things change of you know, it'll be harder for us to do it because we're, you know, we're so interested in sort of propping up this stuff for as long as we can possibly prop it up. And, you know, it's quite frustrating.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm gonna accentuate the positive here. It's cool that something like this exists. You know, maybe I can import one. Maybe I can order one overseas, and that's the beautiful thing about the Internet. We have no borders on the Internet. So maybe I can get one of those. I just convert euros to American dollars, whatever that comes out to, see how this is, you know. But, you know, at the same time, I do get mad because, you know, and I think I mentioned this last week or a week before on a different topic, but it still comes back to me again. We wonder why we're not selling, our electronics aren't selling as much as other countries. Well, because they're being creative. They're coming up with new stuff, and we're sitting in the same old rut, sending special interest groups and lobbyists to stick money on the pockets of our politicians. All right, no, you know what? No, I'm backing up. I'm backing up from this. You know what, though? You know what? There should be one person in the world, and it should be me. There should be one person in the world whose job is it to go to politicians at any level in the United States of America, and when they do something stupid or vote for something that is so obviously stupid and or corrupt, and this person should be the only person authorized in the United States to punch them in the face. And it should be me. I'm the only person that should be allowed to do that. And I would do the job with such vigor, I swear. Oh man. Okay. I'm just going to move to the next email. Is that cool? Because I'm just getting angry. Oh, man. Okay. I'm going to end with this email. This is from Moth. The reason I email, he says, among other things, the reason I email in episode 57, again last week, Stank and Nathalie were talking about the digital media levy up here in Canada. Yes, there is one, but it's not enforced that much. I can go into any real computer store, not the huge chain stores, but and purchase digital media without a levy. The only places that do have levies are the huge chain stores like Future Shop, which is a Canadian equivalent of Compusa. I actually have ordered from Future Shop online. I didn't realize they were a chain, though. I thought they were just a web-only site. That's interesting to know. So I learned something out of this email and the like. So anyone who... All right, I'm going to do a little creative editing. So anyone who buys writable media at Walmart deserves to pay levies. So thank you for clarifying that. We talked about the levies when they were first announced. I think it was Gluco who told us about them originally, and we mentioned it last week. They're trying to do similar stuff in Canada, and I always kind of thought Canada might have had some sense. But it doesn't sound like they're doing much better. You think there's any American pressure for them to pass these type of things?
That's an interesting thought. I don't know. I think that Canada's laws are a little bit more liberal than the United States with respect to this stuff, but it's still, you know, a very vigorous debate there. And certainly the same sort of industries that have the same sort of interest exist there that exists here in the United States, and you know they're certainly doing everything they can to push their agenda. So. You know, you're going to see stuff like this.
Well, anyway, it is good to hear that, you know, if you're going to the chain stores, the Compusas, the Future Shops, whatever they are up there, you're going to get hit with the levy, but you still have other options. I mean, I don't care either way, but I assume he means legal options. I mean, he's saying going into real computer stores. So I guess that's, they're making the choice, I guess. I wonder if they get... If it's like taxes, see, I don't know how levies work in Canada as opposed to taxes. Maybe you know what? Maybe Moth or Gluco or somebody can email me and let me know. It's not exactly like a tax, so I'm not sure. You know, on taxes
like,
they have to charge.
Like, I don't know. It might be a little bit questionable. Like, you know, you go down to your local corner computer store. You know, that's not a big chain, and you know, maybe they'll cut you some CDs, and you know they're not reporting it like they're probably supposed to the government. So
yeah, and I'm all for civil disobedience that way. That's fine. But
that might be the story.
I wonder though, like if it's like taxes where they have to report their sales and a percentage of those tax, and they have to report those taxes to the government. And if they don't, is it coming out of their pocket? Or are they just absorbing it as a cost of doing business? Because, you know, you can go into some stores where they don't charge you tax in the United States, but they are still reporting that tax to the government.
Right.
And they're really just basically calculating that into the cost of the item and cost of doing business. So
that could certainly be the story. You know, those smaller computer stores want to compete, and you know, maybe by offering to cover the cost of the levy, they can bring people in to the store who otherwise might not, and they might pick some other things up while they're there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the case as well. It's hard to tell from his email like what the story is.
Yeah. And if, you know, if it means I have to walk out in the alley out back and buy it off the back of the truck, I'm not above that. All right. Anyway, let's wrap up the email here. We're probably about halfway through the show, so let's wrap up the email. I'm not going to read the who wrote the theme song emails, which, yes, I got again this week. Zerl wrote the song, blah, blah, blah. Anyway. And we actually got a couple other good emails. I'm just going to have to save them for another one so we can move on into the show and tell part of the show and talk about what we've been working on lately. Myself, I mentioned last week, I've been kind of putting some time into learning SQL Server, SQL Server, as Microsoft calls it. So I'm kind of learning that, kind of adapting over from Oracle to SQL Server. Believe it or not, there's some stuff I like about it, but there's some stuff I don't like as well. And I think we'll probably get a mini review of that coming up soon. Touch back on databases again for another episode. It's probably going to be a few episodes away. I got a lot of good stuff lined up. And I put the finishing touches on some articles this week. I'm finally getting caught up on a lot of my writing. I updated the website, as a lot of people know, with the magazine, putting the radio server stuff up, et cetera, et cetera. I also put the finishing touches on two articles, and I wrote a new third article actually over the weekend, something that I found that I thought was kind of interesting, kind of funny. So I sent three articles in total to 2600 in the past couple weeks, and one into Blacklisted. So hopefully we'll be seeing those in print soon, maybe, maybe not, who knows. And that's been pretty much it for me. Believe me, that was enough, don't get me wrong. Now we're going to talk about meme streams, which I know is your big, that's your baby. But is there anything else that you've been working on lately that's just really been interesting to you, or any other projects you've started that you wanted to talk about?
Well, you know, I was thinking about how to answer this question. I've always got lots of projects going on, but I decided instead that I wanted to mention a book.
Oh, we love books.
There was this really interesting article that I read this morning on O'ReillyNet by this guy who read this. He read this book called "Villains of All Nations: Atlantic Pirates of the Golden Age" by Marcus Rediker, and it's a book about pirates in the 18th century. And this guy, who's writing for O'ReillyNet, you know, I mean, he's a computer guy, and he was reading about these 18th century pirates, and he was thinking that, you know, there are some parallels between them and sort of, you know, the pirates of today in the computer community. It's Rediker, this author that he's referencing, is kind of a Marxist, and so he kind of views 18th century pirates through this rose-colored lens, but, you know, he says, you know, pirates had created an onboard ethos of democracy, sharing, and mutual insurance. They created the first social security system, and this was in contrast to military and trading ships of the day ruled by absolutist captains who cheated their staff and kept food and water rations criminally low and freely employed the whip. He goes on to discuss how it is difficult to... is it difficult to find a common thread between the vilification of 18th century pirates and the vilification of people who illegally trade and sell music, movies, and books and software today? Like the old pirates, information traders create a bounty from the work of others, but at the same time they create a new vision of information democracy that contrasts positively with the control freaks and commercial cynicism of the mainstream media conglomerates. So, like I said, Rediker is kind of a Marxist, so I'm not sure, like, I haven't read his book. His book might actually be very good, but, he does kind of have a certain take on things. And it reminded me, though, that I've kind of thought about this analogy between, you know, 18th century pirates and computer hackers before. And I have a favorite book about pirates, and it's called Pirate Utopias, Moorish Corsairs and European Renegados. And it's by this guy named Peter Lamborn Wilson. who is kind of well known in the cyberpunk scene. He wrote this book called Temporary Autonomous Zones, which under a different pen name, which is sort of about anarchies, and it talks about cyberspace and how you can create sort of small anarchies on bulletin boards in cyberspace. You know, this book is about pirates in North Africa in the 18th century, and, you know, he did a bunch of research, and there aren't many good references, and he quotes some of the things that they said and some of the things that they did and tries to figure out what motivated them, and, you know, sort of the ideas that they, you know, felt oppressed by the, you know, sort of proper Victorian English society, and they, you know, didn't feel like they could really be free, and so they... you know, so they kind of revolted by building their own little world in North Africa where they could, you know, they aren't angels by any means. They were, you know, raiding ships and the like in order to pay for their lifestyle. But, you know, at the same time, they had kind of an egalitarian culture, and, and it's just interesting to see these guys and, you know, see what they did to, you know, escape the society and, you know, how they tried to create freedom in their lives. I would highly recommend this book if you're kind of interested in it's kind of an interesting subject, and maybe we'll draw you away from the hundreds of computer books that all of us read on a regular basis into a subject that's a little bit of a tangent. But anyway, well, that's my
yeah. You know what? Actually, I first of all that could be a whole show in itself. A little non-technical, but there's actually, not joking aside, there's a lot to talk about and debate right there, because some things jump to my mind immediately. There's definitely parallels. There are definitely things in common, but I'm not sure how to equate them or if they do equate exactly or the same.
I don't think they do equate exactly or the same. I mean, the reality is that most people in the hacker scene are not sort of making a living off of, you know, other people. They're just really sort of exploring and playing around with stuff. But at the same time, you know, the hacker scene has this, you know, sort of, you know, it's an anti-establishment subculture, and, you know, it's certainly all the people who are engaged with it seem to be very interested in, you know, freedom, and, you know, they kind of seem to think that, you know, this is the world that they live in is a little bit too restrictive, and they're trying to figure out how to build a world in which they can be more free. And there seems to be some similar thinking, at least along those lines, with the North African pirates. And it's at least an entertaining thing to read. It's interesting to see the sort of thoughts that these people were having, the things that they were writing.
Yeah, it sounds like comparing them to hackers and not so much pirates of today, you know, software pirates per se.
Yeah, but
comparing
that's
them
true.
To hackers,
I mean, I use
there's
those words loosely in this case.
Yeah, and I'm sure they also were very, you know, broad in their definitions as well. But, you know, like, for example, again, we could sit and talk about this for a long time anyway. This is something we're going to save this. We'll talk about this at Freaknik, you and I, one day.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, because even like you said about them forming their own island, forming their own society off, you know, I can't help but think, yeah, look at the peer-to-peer applications that went offshore so that they could survive and live and form their own, you know. Anyway, that could go on to be a whole long topic there.
Well, anyway, Lamborn Wilson, he's kind of an anarchist, so he certainly views pirates with his own viewpoint as well. But I think I don't know, whatever. For some reason, his viewpoint suited me better than Reddick's. But you know, check this stuff out; it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, and definitely email me links to that where people can check it out online. And
okay,
you know,
I'll
if they want to order
that.
It, if they want to buy it at Amazon or O'Reilly or whatever.
Right on.
And we'll put it up in the show notes.
Okay, we'll do.
And that's going to leave us, let's see, we've probably got about 20 to 25 minutes to jump into our main topic here. Actually, let me give one very brief topic before we start on memetics. And that is just a site that I stumbled across earlier this week, Monday actually. It's called seewhatyoushare.com. See what you share, in reference to see what you're sharing on peer-to-peer networks. And this is a site, and I just think it's really I don't know if clever is the word, but I like the fact that somebody did it. I think it's something that should have been done to let people see exactly how stupid they're being sometimes. And what this is basically, I don't know if it's one person or a group of people, I don't know who runs the site, quite honestly, but shouts to them anyway, seewhatyoushare.com. And they're basically putting up lots of interesting documents and files that they have found on peer-to-peer file-sharing networks. And they found credit card numbers, bank statements, medical information, pictures, all these things that people, you know, they install whatever peer-to-peer application they want. They just do it poorly, sloppily. They just want to be, you know, download whatever they want to download, and they don't pay attention to what's going on. They don't get it and understand it. And, you know, it's been, you know, hackers have known this for a long time. I've found a lot of interesting stuff, too, if you know what to search for. You know, Google hacking is the art of knowing how to structure your queries or your searches well enough that you can find precise information, sometimes too precise, that wasn't meant to be found. And it's kind of the same thing with this. If you know how to know what to look for, you'd be surprised. Even, you know what, how many people go on peer-to-peer and search for .xls? Most people aren't looking for an Excel spreadsheet on peer-to-peer. They don't even think about it. But you know what? You might be surprised that you'll find quite a few spreadsheets, and you might find quite a few personal spreadsheets, and it doesn't stop at that. So just kind of think about that and what could be shared. Any document files, any text files. What if you knew the extension of, I don't know, their, what is that banking software from Intuit? What is that called?
Quicken?
Yeah, Quicken. If you knew the Quicken files or extensions or directories or whatever you wanted to search by. Or what names, you know. You could be, and that's exactly what this site shows. This site shows, excuse me, is all the dangerous things that people have put out there. Now, they do the right thing and blur all the information. You're not going to find credit card numbers. They blur it out. They blur out real names. They're not embarrassing people. But I love at the bottom the disclaimer. The disclaimer, I should have copied and pasted it verbatim, but basically the disclaimer was all of these files were gained through legal access by downloading from peer-to-peer networks. They were intentionally shared, and we downloaded them. They didn't go break into anything. They didn't steal. They didn't break into a server. They didn't do anything like that. They got something that someone was sharing intentionally. They may not have known it, but they were sharing it. I don't know legally where they stand with that, but I think that's something that needed to be done, and I hope that site gets a lot of publicity so people see how stupid they are sometimes. Hey, it needs to be done sometimes.
You need to raise awareness about that kind of thing because, you know,
honestly,
you know, people need to know how to configure their stuff and they need to think about it.
Yeah, sometimes you have to slap people in the face and call them stupid before they realize it. You really do. Oh, anyway, gosh, I hate to segue now after something so crude into something that's much more on... Well, I'm going to try to do it anyway. I'm going to go from the rock bottom to the top here because the rest of the show we're going to talk about memetics. And if you don't know what memetics are, we're going to explain that and in detail and ask some questions that I have because I've only learned bits and pieces here and there. And I know that this is something that's very near and dear to you and that you know very well. So let's talk about, first of all, we're also going to show how it's applied. But first of all, let's just start about with the idea of what, first of all, is it memetics or memology or memology? I've always said memetics.
I always say memetics too, but the key word is the meme.
Right. Now, what exactly is a meme? Is that something, is it an easy definition?
Well, no, but it, you know, but I'll give it to you. In order to understand memes, you really have to talk about genes. And I'll start by talking about, Charles Darwin. Most people are familiar with Charles Darwin. He wrote this book in the late 1800s, in which he, you know, proposed the theory of evolution, and he talked about, you know, survival of the fittest. And the idea is that different species compete with each other, and the ones that are most fit to survive end up, you know, propagating. And it all has to do with survival of the species. And, you know, everyone's really familiar with those ideas. And genes live forever. You know, one person may, you know, live for 100 years, but, you know, his genes were passed to him from his parents, and he'll pass them on to his children. And a gene you know, may have a thousand-year lifespan before it's wiped out of a species. And it's really important to focus on genes in terms of how you think about evolution. Evolution doesn't really optimize for species. And the easiest way to understand that is to think about the lifespan of species. You know, you would think that if the idea was to propagate your species all over the planet, that the species that would win the evolutionary struggle would be the one that lived the longest. You know, you'd have species, you'd have animals that live for 300 and 400 years because you, you know, because if you lived that long, you know, you could reproduce a lot and, you know, you could just sort of fill up the planet with people like you. But the thing is that the reality is that animals don't usually live much longer than, you know, their first or second or, you know, after a few reproduction cycles. They have enough time to produce, you know, a certain number of offspring, and then they usually die. And the reason for that is that, you know, even if a particular organism dies, as long as it is reproduced, its genes survive. And that's all that's really important. So, of course, a gene is just a piece of information. It's this basic code that gets mixed up and ends up producing, an animal. But really, at its heart, it's just data. And Dawkins started thinking about, you know, what other kinds of data replicators do we have that kind of reproduce and survive in the universe. And so he coined the term meme in the book The Selfish Gene to refer to an idea that works the same way that a gene does. And I guess the best example of a meme is a knock-knock joke. The thing about knock-knock jokes is that they're real small. They're easy to remember, and they're easy to repeat. So if I tell you a knock-knock joke, hopefully, you know, you'll think it's funny, and you'll remember it, and it's really easy for you to spread it to someone else. And you're motivated to do that because you want to make that person laugh, too.
Right.
So these knock-knock jokes, they kind of spread word of mouth. You know, they're not, you don't see them on TV. You don't really read them in books. You don't hear them on the radio. It's just something that you hear from your friends. And they live, you know, for years, just passing from person to person, sort of like a virus. And that's what Dawkins was talking about when he was talking about a meme. And he wanted to ask questions about, you know, what are the different kinds of memes in our society? And what are they doing? I think that you know, there's two qualities that make a piece of information more meme-like.
Okay,
the first
now wait a minute.
Before
we make a comparison to memes and genes more specifically and data, let's back up just a little bit.
Okay.
If memes, okay, because I think you made a point early on. I just wanted to clarify. Obviously, an animal that, you're saying a child, for example, would have a genetic disorder and die at an early age due to a bad gene or a bad genetic disorder, and therefore it doesn't get passed on. So the gene sort of dies out? Is that true? Or does data stop? Do you lose data if it's in a situation like that? Because, again, I'm very, first of all, I'm asking this is definitely a question because I don't know the first thing about it. Isn't that still carried on somehow through the parents if they had other childs that did not, for example, get that disorder?
Okay. So the way this works is, you know, that information you're mentioning is related to the question of, you know, is it survival of the fittest genes or survival of the fittest species? Certain kinds of information, and in the case of genes, certain kinds of genetic code are more apt to survive than others. For example, let me go back to my mimetic context and talk about knock-knock jokes. Okay. A knock-knock joke that isn't funny is not going to survive very long because you're not going to spread it. You know, someone might tell it to you, but you're not going to tell it to somebody else because it's not very good. The same thing happens with genes. If you have a gene that, you know, causes certain people who have it to die, you know, when they're 10 years old, chances are those people would not have made it to reproduction by the time that gene takes effect. So they're not going to spread that gene onto their children. Whereas, you know, other animals that don't have that gene, you know, they'll you know, happily reproduce and spread whatever genetic code they happen to have. So genes that can cause you know, sort of early childhood illness are less likely to you know, propagate in the gene pool, and we certainly have them, but they're rare. There is, you know, there's this thing that happens in genetics where certain genes are recessive and dominant, and there are situations where, you know, you've got a genetic disorder that affects you as a child, but and it came from your parents, but your parents didn't get it because, you know, they happen to get lucky, you know, and they didn't get the, you know, that particular gene wasn't active, it wasn't dominant for them.
Right. So I think I understand now. It's a matter of over time, those genes, because they don't get passed on as frequently, they become more and more recessive. So they may still exist, but just less likely to take shape or take form.
Well, the reality is that they work their way out of the system because, you know, if 50%, let's say we have two genes, A or B, and you either have A or B, and, you know, 50% of the people who get A die before they're 10. You know, but everyone who has B lives. You know, during your first generation, you know, you've got so many people with A and so many people with B, and they're equal. So in your second generation, you've lost 50% of the people that had A. So everyone who had B reproduced, and only 50% of the people who had A reproduced. And then in your next generation, you lose half of the A's again.
Right, so it becomes more and more.
Ultimately, those kinds of genes whittle themselves out, and everyone in the world has just got B, and very few people have A.
Right, but they do still exist, is what I'm basically asking. They'll exist even on the most tiny, minuscule, fractional possibilities?
Well, I mean, eventually they can die out.
They can, oh.
Yes. I mean, it's possible to for these things to get bred out of the system.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
The dominant recessive genes is a technical subject that I'm not really qualified to talk about. Sometimes, you know, genes are more likely to get exhibited if they exist in your system than other ones. Like they overpower each other. So depending upon the certain makeup that you've got, you know, some things will end up, you know, exhibiting in you, and, you know, other things, you'll have the information inside of you, but it won't actually turn into a physical characteristic.
Right. Okay, so let's go back now to that idea of turning as genes as types of data, as being just basically like similar to data.
Right. I mean, genetic code is just information, and it's information about how you build an animal. And the reality is that memes, in a sense, are just information. A knock-knock joke is just raw data. But what's interesting about both genes and memes is that they replicate, and they spread themselves, and they survive over long periods of time. Even though one particular carrier, you know, a person may have a gene and then die, or a person may know a knock-knock joke and then either forget about it or die. But, you know, the knock-knock joke lives on. The gene lives on, you know, because it gets reproduced. And that's what memetics is all about. It's all about taking a look at pieces of information that tend to reproduce and spread through society in the same way that genes reproduce and spread through species.
Okay, so memetics sounds like it's very, very, it's obviously very, very closely tied to genetics. As you said, it's definitely, that's what it's all about. Why do I hear the term memes and memetics so much lately, like in, you know, I hear it used in the same breath, and forgive me if I'm putting you on the spot here, but as culture jamming, for example, because the something about repetition of ideas and slogans and catchphrases and that type of thing.
There are two things that make a meme. There are all kinds of different pieces of information, and some aren't very meme-like, and some are. You know, for example, calculus isn't a very good meme because it's so complex and it takes a long time to communicate. But the thing is that it's very useful, and so we do communicate it anyway. And so it does survive for long periods of time within our, you know, sort of, you know, information soup that gets shared between all of us human beings. But you know, it also spreads kind of slowly. Really complex ideas, you know, tend to spread slowly. If you've got something that is as useful as calculus, but it is as small as a knock-knock joke, that's the kind of thing that will spread through society like wildfire. It's like a fad. You know, everyone will find out about it in the course of a very short period of time because it's really easy for it to spread, and it's really, people really want to spread it. So when
something
you're talking
like
about culture jamming, you know, what people who are trying to sort of influence other people might be interested in doing is finding ways to communicate their message, without necessarily, like, they may not necessarily, particularly when you're talking about culture jammers, they don't necessarily have access to, you know, big TV stations and, you know, big media, so they can't really write an article and have it appear and have, like, millions of people read it. So, you know, how are they going to get their message out there to a large number of people? Well, maybe, what if they expressed their idea in such a way that it was like a knock-knock joke? It was really short, and maybe it was even funny, and people would repeat it word of mouth. You know, sort of maybe take a quip at somebody, and other people will spread it, and it kind of, you know, you might spread it because you think it's funny, but it also kind of communicates this message. And as it goes from person to person, as it kind of spreads around, you know, it informs people while it entertains them. So, you know, people who are interested in sort of communicating messages through society might be interested in coming up with really good memes that they could tell a few people to that would kind of spread on their own and would give a particular piece of information to everyone who heard about it.
Let me throw this at you and tell me if this is a good example or a bad example.
Okay.
Thinking like calculus, like you said, something that sure it may spread around for a while, but it's not really that wide. Let me go with music. Let me go on a music thing. Beethoven, Mozart, all these brilliant composers and stuff. But how many people do you hear playing that in their car or singing or whistling that and stuff like that? That's something that, as an idea, as a bit of data, as an existence, a meme, I guess I can use the word that way. You don't hear so often, yet you can very easily and commonly hear somebody walking down the street whistling the McDonald's jingle.
That's an interesting
or something
thing.
Like yeah. that, because it's short, easy to remember, and stick into people's head, and therefore be more likely to propagate and spread because of its simplicity, because it's catchy, because it's something that can easily stick in people's mind.
One of the things that Dawkins talks about in The Selfish Gene is the idea that memes sort of change the consciousness of the person they infect. When you receive this piece of information, it kind of rewires your head a little bit. And how effective it is at rewiring your head relates to how likely you are to spread it. If it really has a great influence on your thinking, then, you know, you're very likely to repeat it. And catchy jingles are a good example. And that's why, you know, advertisers use them. You know, they want to get a song like the McDonald's theme song stuck in your head, right. And then they attach this, and it's catchy. So it has a good mimetic quality in the sense that it rewires you, and it tends to pop up in your thinking. And then they attach this message to it, you know, McDonald's. So whenever this thing pops up in your head, you kind of end up going to McDonald's. So I mean, that's, you know, that's certainly related.
And to take that a step further then and apply it again to my, well, I think I'm putting two and two together here. The way I see it mentioned with culture jamming so much is, and let's stick with the McDonald's example, the Golden Arches, you know, very famous. Everybody knows and recognizes the Golden Arches. Simplicity, easy to remember, something you associate with food, whatever. The culture jamming that I've seen is like artists generally who will take those McDonald's arches and spin them and put their own message into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the T-shirts that say, oh gosh, I can't think one of one now that I'm on the spot. It'll have the McDonald's arches, but it'll have little demon eyes inside of it or something. I'm just making something completely up to show that, yes, you recognize the arches, but I'm sending you a different message about the arches.
That's true.
Is that how it's applied to culture jamming? I think I'm actually understanding this a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. The only thing that I add is that, you know, those aren't really effective memes unless you spread them. So, you know, if you see them and you know, on the one hand, if they can sort of take advantage of, you know, a corporate jingle or some sort of thing like that that's in your head, that's going to pop in your head, and they can put a different message there, then that's very interesting, you know, because they can, you know, because they can kind of piggyback on that that infectious idea in order to present a different concept to you. But the thing is that memes really have to be, they really have to do with reproduction. They really have to do with the idea that it's not just that you'll get infected with it, but that you'll spread it to somebody else.
Right.
So if you see a t-shirt that's got kind of a funny slogan on it, you know, it's not just about, like, does it affect your thinking? It's also about, you know, are you going to say to somebody else, hey, I saw this really funny t-shirt.
Or I want to buy one of those t-shirts as well. Right. Or, you know,
or you'll buy one as well, and, you know, maybe you'll cause other people to buy them. It's all about, like, does it spread from person to person through the word-of-mouth network.
Gotcha. Yeah, I understand. I think that is what the goal of a lot of the Culture Jammers is, to, you know, sell the t-shirts that are slick, you know, not the Farfignugan t-shirt, but the one that's a little bit different for, you know. I think I see that. Now, tell me, what have you done? We've got probably about 10 more minutes here. We got time. Tell me exactly how memes and how memetics can be applied in a technical application, because that's really what you do over at Meme Streams.
Well, you know, the thing you might want to ask about memes, once you realize that they exist, once you realize that these pieces of information kind of replicate and spread, is you might want to find out two things. The first is, you know, how did they spread? You know, where are the people that are really good at spreading them? You know, are there people that, you know, maybe somebody gets a meme and, you know, they tell everyone they know about it, but they don't really know that many people. So it doesn't go very far. Whereas if you tell somebody else about it, that person, they tend to be connected to everybody. And they start talking about it, and all of a sudden everyone's talking about it. Those are kinds of interesting questions. And the second thing that, you know, I think would be really useful is to be able to harness the knowledge about the spread of memes through society so that you can kind of catch memes before they reach critical mass. Maybe you want to know which ideas are up and coming, and they really haven't, you know, spread all over the place, but a few people are talking about them, and they might be the next big thing. Maybe you want to know about that before everyone else does. So you want to be in tune to where those new ideas, those new memes arise.
Right.
So those are kind of the questions that me and a friend of mine started asking each other, and we kind of got from that topic onto, you know, it's a very long story. We were talking about reputation systems, which is a kind of related subject, and reputation systems have to do with determining, you know, who it is that you trust, who it is that you respect, and that's a very important thing when you get into the spread of memes. You know, somebody that you don't respect, you know, gives you a piece of information, you're much less likely to, you know, repeat it than if someone you have a lot of interest in and trust in gives you a piece of information. But what we really wanted to try to do is a couple of different things, but one of the things we wanted to do is build a network where we could see how memes propagate between people, you know, sort of word of mouth, and figure out, you know, who's got the most interesting memes, and maybe get those memes in front of us faster than they otherwise would. So what Meme Streams does, it's a reputation system for weblogs. Weblogs are very meme-y things. You go out on a website and you see an interesting article, and what you do is share it on your weblog so that other people can get it, and maybe they share it too. Networks of weblogs are really interesting places to study memetics. You can figure out, you know, that there's a couple of weblogs that, you know, sort of are at the center of the network, and when those guys find out about something, everybody's got it. And you can maybe find out where those guys get the information that they're looking at. And you can, you know, if you could look at all the traffic that goes into a big weblog network and see where things start and how they flow, you might learn some interesting things about how people work. Meanstreams is a reputation system for weblogs. You post content there, and you read other people's content, and it kind of passively learns, you know, whose recommendations you find interesting and whose content you tend to read, and it figures out who you trust. And one of the things it does is it shows you, over time, once it's learned about this stuff, it shows you content that it thinks you'll like because you've trusted those people in the past. So that's kind of it's useful because it helps you filter out all this stuff that goes around on the internet. You know, it gets you closest to the people that you are most interested in. And the other thing that it does is it doesn't just look at who you find interesting, but it looks at who those people get their information from. And as you use the system over time, you know, maybe you start out by reading a couple of your friends' weblogs, but the information that you really like from one of your friends is actually coming from someone else. Well, the system will figure that out, and then you'll start reading that person directly. And then maybe it turns out that the stuff that he's recommending, you know, maybe most of the stuff that you like comes from another person, and he's getting it from them. So it'll put you closer and closer and closer to the sources of information that you really find interesting.
Right, and I see the clear, obvious relationship to genetics and passing the information along.
Yep, it's all about replicators.
Now, is it just by people that you associate with, or is it also by topic? Does it track and can tell the way, like if I only, let's say I find Acidus, a lot of the links that he provides to be very interesting, and the system can tell that, and then whoever Acidus finds interesting in turn and on down the line. But what if I only find interesting, like, the technical, and like on the show we always say we try to stay technical, not political. Is there some way that it will weed out not only everything that Acidus says, but the things that Acidus says that are tech-related? Is there a way to control that?
Yes, there is. In this system, you post when you post a weblog, or you post a weblog entry, you associate it with the topic. And then when you're using the system, it doesn't just ask, you know, whose links you like. It asks, it rates the person by topic. And all the articles in the system are broken down by topic. So you can say something like, I like what this guy's talking about technology, but I don't necessarily, I'm not so interested in what that guy's saying about pets. But there's kind of differing philosophies about that. And so it's possible to turn that system on and off. Some people think that, you know, a really, you know, smart, interesting person is going to have smart, interesting things to say regardless of what subject they're talking about. So I don't know. It kind of depends. Some people want to filter out, or focus in on the content that the subjects that interest them, and some people kind of want to focus in on the people that interest them. And I've tried to build something that lets you do either or.
Both, yeah, and you know that's really one of the things I've got to say as we're starting to run out here. I want to point out that one of the things I've liked and that I've noticed is that I like the intellectual nature of what I have found on the site, even though I don't usually like a lot of other, you know, I usually am looking for technical information. I'm just really hardcore tech guy. I just don't like getting into the whole political end of things. However, I do still find some interesting topics on there. At least when I do find them, they're very intellectual and analytical in their style. And again, maybe that's because the people that I'm associated to are feeling and finding the same things and feeling the same way. Now, is there... I'm going to make a very wide-open question here for you as we wrap it up, because we've got a few minutes left, 4 or 5 minutes left maybe. Is there anything else? First of all, the URL.
www.memestreams.net.
Okay, make sure...
Let me spell memestreams, because people don't understand how to spell it. It's M-E-M-E-S. T-R-E-A-M-S. I was really amazed when I picked the name. I thought that more people were familiar with memes and knew what memes were, but it turns out that very few people know about memes. So, you know, usually when I tell people about the site, they say meme streams and mem streams, and they're just not comfortable with that word. So,
okay, meme streams, and it's .net, right?
Yep.
Is there anything else on there? Like, I don't know if this is an insult to say this or a sore spot, but is there, I mean, slash dot?
Well, okay, so...
Are there some similarities or not?
There's certainly, like, at first glance are some similarities, because what you see when you come to the site is a list of articles, and you get pretty much a list of articles when you go to Slashdot, and those articles have threads, and, you know, some of that structure is similar. The difference is not so much up front. The difference is what's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
The way that Slashdot works, it has this karma system. And the thing about the karma system is that it has, and I'll use a 50-cent word here, a monohierarchical view of what is quality content. The guys that run Slashdot, they hold all the karma, and they give it out to, you know, their people that they think are interesting. And those people give it out to people that they think are interesting, and it kind of spreads out from one source. The stuff that you see on Slashdot is stuff that really relates to the interests of the people that run Slashdot. And if your opinions were grossly different from that of Slashdot, and, you know, that's really unlikely in a site that's focused on technology. It's more likely to come up in a political context. But if your opinions were grossly different, you know, you would have a very hard time getting lots of karma points because, you know, people would be unlikely to give them to you because you would be sort of outside the inner circle. The way that MemeStreams works is all of the sort of karma, I guess, in the system flows from you. It looks at who you think is interesting and whose opinions you respect. And when you use the reputation agent, you get a list of articles that is custom to you. So, you know, two people could use the site that had very dramatically different interests and different opinions about what's valuable, and they would get very dramatically different views of the site. And the site's, you know, so instead of having a site that circles around Commander Taco, this site circles around you and what you think is important.
Very interesting.
There's a really great example of this that I wanted to mention on the show. There's this guy that does analysis of networks of people who has a website with some very interesting graphs. I'll give this URL out. It's www.orgnet.com/divided.html. orgnet.com/divided.html. This guy did an analysis of the Amazon.com book data where, you know, some people, you know, people who bought this book might have also bought these other books. And what he found out is that there's, you know, pretty much two categories of books. There's, in the political space, there's Democratic books and Republican books. And people that read Republican books don't read Democrat books. And people that read Democrat books don't read Republican books. And there's very, very few books that get read by people on both sides. So, really, we have in our country two great groups of political thinking that are totally in echo chambers, and they don't really communicate with each other. They don't know what each other thinks. So, it's a very instructive graph. And if you think about, you know, if you were on a website that had sort of a karma-based system, and, you know, someone on the blue side of this picture, a Democrat, was running the system, it would be very difficult for the Republicans to really get what they wanted out of it because you know, they would have almost totally separate interests.
Right. Absolutely. Now, we're going to have to wrap it up here. Last minute, last 30 seconds. Anything else?
Well, I want to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come on your show.
No, you don't have to do that. Let's pimp the site again. MemeStreams.net. Yep. Please go register and watch what we've explained here of how it works and see and notice it in action. You know, that's the best way. And then maybe come back and re-listen to the show afterwards.
Yep.
So, no, thank you for actually being on the show. And let's jump into shout-outs. We've got just a couple minutes here. Let me give a couple quick shout-outs myself. Sub-Zero, DJ Mollusk, they've been helping out with some things that needed to be done. They took the initiative themselves to work on some stuff that they knew were projects and stuff that I needed to do. So they jumped on that and started, you know, helping me out with that. So I appreciate that. To Salvea, he sent me an email. I did not read on the show tonight, but about some problems with my KVM switch. I'm going to try to follow up on his suggestions and see if that works. And to Death Mule, who has put up another mirror of the show. We can always use more mirrors, so shouts out to him. And you, anybody you want to shout out to? I know you got a big crew there in the southeast, the Dirty Dirty.
Well, I'll give a shout out to Acidus, and I'll give a shout out to Rattle and JLM.
Yeah, I met both Acidus and Rattle, both very, very nice guys. I definitely second that shout out.
Absolutely. And I want to give a shout out to Dolomite and the Freaknik crew. Can't wait for that. That's coming up in November. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, I'm trying my best to get to that if the airfare works out.
So I guess that's it.
All right, sounds good. And again, anybody that wants to email us about anything, radio@benrev.com is the email address for feedback. I'm still accepting articles for issue 2.2 of Binary Revolution magazine. You want to submit those articles to this address. articles@benrev.com. Makes sense. And our closing music tonight is from Tech Nine. It's called Slacker. Now, somebody sent me this. Somebody sent me this link and told me about this guy. And it's awesome. I really like this guy. I don't like a lot of... I'm very particular in my taste of music, and especially in rap and hip-hop or whatever you want to call it. But this guy I really like a lot. So I burnt the CD. I've been listening to it all week. So I don't remember who sent me the link. So please email me. Let me know so I can thank you on the air. Been listening to Tech N9ne. His whole album he's put online for download. You can download, burn the whole album for free. Again, hoping maybe that you'll buy the other albums he has available. But he put the one out for free. Very cool of him to try something new, try a new distribution method, trying to get attention like that. I think that's a very cool thing to do, and it's a damn good album. So, that's going to do it. Now, Decius, thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I wish I had set aside more time there at the end. I've heard so many, I hear the buzzword itself, but I've never had someone sit down and explain it to me. So thank you for doing that, and I hope the listeners got as much out of it as I did. So, and you know what? We'll have to have you back on again to maybe pick up on something we missed or talk about some of the other stuff you got going on.
Hey, I'm more than happy to do that.
Right.
You know, we just scratched the surface here. There's a whole lot of stuff to talk about. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll gladly have you back. We'll work something out. But until then, we end the show the same way every time. It may be cliche and repetitive, but I still like it. And we still end the show by saying that we will see everyone next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Slacker, a person who shirks his work or duty, a person who evades military service in wartime. I know one thing, man, I'm gonna have my kick before the whole shit house goes up in flame. You know what I'm saying? Eat, drink, and be merry. Tomorrow you may die. That's what life's about, man. Good times, salad.
Yo, I'm a product of Reaganomics, neurotic, they sayin' I'm it. Just got up inhaling chronic, the oddest, I'm staying honest. I'm about to make it famous, so you can take the J-O-B and you can shove it up your anus. I ain't never understood how the world works, but I always understood why the girls twerk. For a baller, not a 9 to 5, barely making it with disgust behind your eyes. So I just grip my piece, rip off fleece, out to take your lip off cheap. With my peeps, we ruthless. If you got money induced, the goose get toothless. We loose off 2/5, we useless. I wanna kick it, but ain't got the dough. Sneak in the concert, trip and make them stop the show. We got to go, push me and I sock the pole. Getting the bell from my parents is impossible.
I'm a slacker.
Never did I have a lot of dough.
I'm a slacker.
Smoking pot and watching videos.
I'm a slacker.
Go whichever way the wind blows. Though just tuning in, I'm just letting you know.
I'm a slacker.
Every time I take a look around.
I'm a slacker. I'm a slacker.
By my everyday fits, I ain't rich. I sneak with a piece when I grip. I'm just another gap man caught up in the mix. Trying to take your dollar and your 15 cents.
I grind with a pistol.
I stay rid of you lame.
Y'all game.
I play video games
all day.
With Kansas City, mo brains, it's gritty, slow game. We diddy bop with really no change.
Y'all bae.
And people holla how you do that there. Why your pants hanging low and why you grew that hair.
Lighting a bleasel with my people riding a Regal. Always in trouble with coppers cause we driving illegal.
and illegal.
And I ain't never giving them leeway to hem me nay. The judicial assembly's gay. Hey,
I come out at night cause I sleep all day.
Trying to get with Def Jam Loud or MCA.
I'm a slacker.
Never did I have a lot of dough.
I'm a slacker.
Smoking pot and watching videos.
I'm a slacker.
Go whichever way the wind blows. Those just tuning in, I'm just letting you know.
I'm a slacker.
Every time I take a look around.
I'm a slacker. I'm a slacker.
I'm doing up. I just fool around. Y'all can go ahead.
Yo, check. Party and my homies got to pay for me. Holidays, them just be another day for me. Getting drunk, hoping I get to the Krilla safely. Pray for me, cause I'm needing money majorly. Sit at home watching MTV with an MTP. O-C-K-E-T, I MP3. Everything that I hear on the street. Never buy, don't deny it, I'm the fear, I'm a beast. You say get a job,
yeah.
I say hit a knob.
Yeah.
Cause the way you run the world is every bit of fraud.
Yeah.
So what you ask of me, you get no tax from me. I got white, native, and Mexican, and blacks with me, huh? I'm trying to get up there with Master P, pass the D, cause that's the way it has to be.
Yeah.
We bust to be free,
yeah.
We trust to be G,
yeah.
So fuck who be Glee,
yeah.
It sucks to be me.
I'm a slacker.
Never did I have a lot of dough.
I'm a slacker.
Smoking pot and watching videos.
I'm a slacker.
Go whichever way the wind blows. Those just tuning in, I'm just letting you know.
I'm a slacker.
Every time I take a look around.
I'm a slacker.
I'm a slacker.
I'm a slacker.
Smoking pot and watching videos.
I'm a slacker.
Go whichever way the wind blows. Those just tuning in, I'm just letting you know.
I'm a slacker.
Every time I take a look around.
I'm a slacker.
Stuck up on the slacker.